This podcast is featured on the Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom. You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones, on demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under sources.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco Liberal with a Gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Howdy, folks. Cowboy T here, San Francisco Liberal with a Gun. We got a few things to talk about on this episode, some involving guns, some involving liberty. Matter of fact, the whole reason we're talking about guns here is because by definition we're also talking about liberty. The Second Amendment exists, remember, to provide the teeth to the Constitution that it needs. Without the Second Amendment, the other nine amendments are just words on paper. They don't mean a doggone thing without teeth to back them up. Of course, this implies the inverse as well. Without liberty as guaranteed to us by the Constitution, including the Bill of Rights, we wouldn't even need the Second Amendment. Just look at North Korea, Red China, Iran. No liberty, no need to defend it. Duh. So we take violations of constitutional liberties of any sort pretty seriously here on the Liberals Gun Corner. As I've pointed out before, I'm a veteran of the United States Air Force. Like millions before me and millions after me, I took an oath to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So, as a veteran, when I see violations of liberty by those in authority over us, I have a problem with that. Just last week, we saw what struck me as a terrible abuse of authority by a teacher over a student. Seems a 16-year-old girl named Samantha Paulacki, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Samantha, decided to wear a Romney Ryan 2012 campaign t-shirt to her school. Now, this was during a sanctioned dress-down day, so basically, as long as the kids aren't showing up in ripped clothes, thong bikinis, clothing with clearly offensive stuff like, you know, nudity or racial epithets and such as that, it's wide open. You wear pretty much anything you want. Well, it seems there was no problem with Samantha's t-shirt until she got to her geometry class. When she got there, her geometry teacher, a Ms. Lynette Gaiman, apparently didn't like it, and she ordered Samantha to get out of the classroom. Samantha, of course, declined to do so. Then the teacher told her to get rid of that shirt. Samantha refused. Apparently, that didn't go over so well, because Ms. Gaiman then asked her, "Are your parents Republican?" Well, Samantha said she didn't know. The teacher then referred to this campaign t-shirt as like wearing a KKK shirt. Well, apparently this teacher wasn't through with this girl. Seems that Ms. Gaiman then pulls Samantha out into the hallway and encourages others, including other teachers, to insult her and humiliate her. Well, according to some reports, either Ms. Gaiman then tried to scribble on Samantha's shirt, or someone else tried it and Ms. Gaiman did nothing to stop it. I don't know, folks. That's starting to sound like assault. Oh, and that's not all. The other students in her classroom don't like Samantha now anymore. They're ridiculing her, too, because it seems that Ms. Gaiman is a popular teacher. Kids in her class start saying things to her like, "Well, we all like Obama. Why don't you?" And other stuff like, "What's wrong with you? You don't like Obama." There have even been threats against this girl. As you might imagine, Samantha's parents were and are livid. They went to the school to get to the bottom of this, just as my parents would do. At least I'm pretty darn confident they would. They asked for a meeting with the principal. During this meeting, the teacher apparently apologized to Samantha, but then the teacher claimed, "Well, I was only joking. I joke with students all the time." Now, folks, as a liberal myself, I'm not exactly a fan of the Romney-Ryan ticket or what the Republican Party has become over the last 20 years. But isn't there a basic presumption of free speech that we have here in this country? Apparently both the principal and the superintendent do think so, because they both released statements confirming that it was, in fact, Samantha's First Amendment right to wear that shirt. Oh, and that she did nothing wrong. I remind all of you, by the way, that this high school, Charles Carroll High School in Philadelphia, ironically the City of Liberty, is indeed a public school district. That means government institution, folks. Every teacher and administrator who works there is a government employee. Now, I used to work for a public school district until, just under a year ago, so I'm pretty darn familiar with how all this works. In that classroom, that teacher has legal authority over the students in that school. And since that includes 18-year-olds, then it most definitely includes minors, too, like Samantha, who was 16. When an authority figure in a classroom, i.e. a teacher, makes a judgment on you, that carries a lot of weight to a kid in class. When that teacher bullies a student and proactively humiliates that student, that's an abuse of power. Oh, on top of that, if that isn't all this isn't enough, as a government institution, there are federal, state, and municipal laws against government employees advocating for political candidates or parties. Now, that doesn't mean you can't go do that in your off time. No, you have a First Amendment right too. But you can't do that in your official capacity, and definitely not while on duty. Oh no, that teacher, a government employee, grossly violated every rule in the book about that. Every government institution I've ever worked for, that's grounds for disciplinary action. This teacher, Lynette Gaiman, was transferred to another classroom. She's no longer Samantha's geometry teacher. But that was only after this incident made national news, see. Furthermore, this Ms. Gaiman is still teaching at that school. How could this be after she's shown what she's willing to do to a kid? You know, one that disagrees with her politically. Oh, well, is the shirt offensive or incendiary? Some might ask. Okay, fair question. Let's look at that. I've seen pictures of this shirt. It's pink. Yeah. It's colored pink. It has Romney Ryan 2012 on it. There's nothing offensive or otherwise incendiary about it. That's all it says, folks. Romney Ryan 2012. It's not calling someone the N-word or saying, down with the Jews, Muslims, Christians, whatever religion, or kill Whitey, or even Obama sucks. Nothing else like that. It certainly isn't a KKK shirt. It simply says, Romney Ryan 2012. Oh my God! Call the National Guard back from Afghanistan! We have a crisis here! Here's the not-so-delicious irony of all this, folks. This teacher, Ms. Lynette Gaiman, is a member of a group of people who should be the first to defend civil liberties like this. Yeah, that's right. She is. Matter of fact, it was an army of women like her who did the lion's share of the walking during the Montgomery bus boycotts of the 1950s. Hey, you know, that little thing that some insignificant woman named Rosa Parks inspired during the Jim Crow days. Back then, most women like her were maids cleaning households for the richer folk. They boycotted those buses for over a year, walking to and from work. In some cases, for miles. Often in inclement weather, pouring rain, you know, the pouring rain that you get in Alabama sometimes. The muddy roads, all that stuff, all such and stuff. And it wasn't fun at all. Those women didn't want to do that. No way. But they did do it and stuck to it because they knew that liberty depended on it. Liberty for themselves, their husbands, their sons, their daughters. And after over a year of a punishing loss of profits, the city of Montgomery, Alabama, finally reversed its terrible, racist, back-of-the-bus rule. Yes, folks, that teacher, Lynette Gaiman, is a black woman of all people to oppose a civil right. I'm not just an Air Force veteran, folks. I'm also the son of a black man. How coincidental. How far have we fallen, folks, that we could somehow condone or even tolerate the bullying of a 16-year-old girl just because she doesn't follow what some teacher believes? Even worse, how could we have gotten to a point as Americans where our teachers actually think it's okay to browbeat, bully, and humiliate a student for the terrible, treasonous act of wearing a campaign t-shirt? Is this what America's coming to? Is this the land of the free that I and so many others signed up to defend? Where the hell is the ACLU on all this? Where the hell is Attorney General Eric Holder? Where the hell are Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton now? Seriously, I want to know. This is a clear violation of a student's First Amendment rights, and they're all silent. Well, this San Francisco, California-raised liberal is not going to be silent. Uh-uh. Let that teacher try that with someone who can defend him or herself. Matter of fact, hey, Lynette, I'll wear a Romney Ryan t-shirt. How about you try coming after me like you did that girl, huh? Yeah, somehow I don't believe you dare try someone like me. But you do go after someone you think can't defend herself. A 16-year-old girl over whom you have legal authority. Lynette, you make me want to throw up. You are a disgrace to the teaching profession. None of my teachers ever acted even remotely like you did. Instead, they taught me critical thinking. They taught me to read and consider as many sides of an issue as I could get my hands on. They also taught me how to seek out even more information sources, then make my own decision based on that critical thinking that they had taught me. I never really knew for sure what the politics of my teachers were back then, especially my math teachers. Looking back now, you know, with the hindsight of years, I think one of my English teachers might have leaned Democratic, but I wasn't sure even about her. Still not now. She kept that out of the classroom, just like she was supposed to do. Instead of political indoctrination, I learned to appreciate prose and poetry. Oh, as well as the spoken word from some of the readings that we did in class. That was fun. Mrs. Lee Walter was her name, and I learned a heck of a lot from her. Thank you, Mrs. Lee Walter. In part, because of you, I can actually write a decent poem here and there. And by the way, you know that piece Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening by Robert Frost that you had us recite in class? That, well, you were good. You were absolutely right. Robert Frost was just good. That remains one of my favorite poems to this day. And it's been, what, how many years? What I didn't learn from you, though, or any of my other teachers for that matter, was political indoctrination. You didn't try to push your personal political beliefs onto us kids. You all left that up to us to decide. Samantha Paulacki didn't get that, unfortunately. All that's happened is that this geometry teacher got reassigned to a different classroom at the same school. The Paulacki family wants Lynette Gayden fired. And I agree. Lynette Gayden needs to not only be fired and barred from ever teaching in the state of Pennsylvania again for what she did, but also personally sued for abuse of that kid. She totally, willfully misused her authority and stepped on Samantha's First Amendment rights of free speech. Oh, and then she tries to claim she was just joking. What the hell? Okay, we can do that. How about someone call her a black woman the N-word and say, oh, just joking. How well would that go over? Huh? Vigilance, folks. That's the price we must continually pay to keep freedom. And that includes when we don't agree with the speech. We talked about that in the last episode, as a matter of fact, when I mentioned the Phil Donahue show back in the 1990s that changed my mind on that. See, our personal feelings on what someone might have to say, That's irrelevant. As much as we respect and honor the Second Amendment, we must also respect and honor the First Amendment. Remember, the Supreme Court made it glaringly clear in the case of Tinker versus Des Moines, oh, which my teachers taught me about, by the way, thank you, Mr. Douglas A. Chapel, that students do not give up their constitutional rights when they enter the schoolhouse gate. That's what the court said. Just like Roe v. Wade, it's the law of the land, period, full stop. Back then, it was black armbands as a protest against Vietnam. Well, even though I personally disagree with the message on young Samantha Paulacki's t-shirt, I don't see how her wearing of that t-shirt is any different from those black armbands 45 years ago. The ACLU was there back then. Where are they now? We'll take a short break for station identification and be right back. Stay tuned.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership, gunrightsradio.com.
We're talking about liberty, folks. We just got through discussing the unfortunate destruction of a 16-year-old girl's First Amendment rights at the hands of her bullying geometry teacher. Let's take another avenue with regard to liberty and the preservation thereof. I was reading one gun forum over there, this liberal-oriented one. I learned about something called the Battle of Athens. I'd never heard of it before. Well, it was presented in response to the notion that average citizens don't need military-style assault weapons. There are some who seem to be, you know, kind of pro-gun ownership, but they still believe that military-style rifles aren't needed in the general populace. You know, things like so-called high-capacity magazines and such. As a liberal, I'd like to make a case to the contrary for your consideration. Seems there was this thing shortly after World War II called the Battle of Athens. Happened in 1946, right after the big war. Turns out in this county, there was rampant corruption going on. There was a family called the Cantrell family, which basically ran everything. It was a lot like Tammany Hall of New York. Not only did they control what was happening as far as who got to run for political office, there was also, in addition, some sort of a racket for making arrests of people and pocketing some of the ticket money. This, folks, is a classic case of why an armed citizenry is necessary, what I'm about to describe to you. This happened in McMinn County, Tennessee. The city was Athens. Bunch of GIs had just got home. Now, as I just told you, the Cantrell family basically ran McMinn County. They had done a number of things to increase their power, like, for example, reducing the number of justices of the peace from 14 to 7, four of which were Cantrell family members. Y'all see where this is going, don't you? Somebody gets pulled over or, you know, taken into custody for whatever. They're cited. They go to court. They've got a 4-7 chance of getting a Cantrell man as a judge. Guess what the verdict's gonna be, folks? Kind of sounds like those Admiralty courts of years ago with the British, back when we were still the colonies. Yeah. Well, those GIs came home to this. They, being GIs, of course, were accustomed to if you got them, smoke them. If you got them, drink them. They had just gotten through fighting an incredibly bloody war against the Axis powers. Hitler's Germany, Mussolini's Italy, and Hirohito's Japan. And daggone it, they were going to have a drink. So, matter of fact, I'll describe for you what's happening in the words of one of those returning veterans. I quote, Bill White, there were several beer joints and honky-tonks. A honky-tonk is basically a nightclub, around Athens. Yeah, we were pretty wild. We started having trouble with the law enforcement at that time because they started making a habit of picking up GIs and fining them heavily for most anything. They were kind of making a racket out of it. After long, hard years of service, most of us were hardcore veterans of World War II. We were used to drinking our liquor and our beer without being molested. When these things happened, the GIs got madder. The more GIs they arrested, the more they beat up, the madder we got. Over time, the GIs obviously had decided enough is enough. Here's what they did. they decided to run politically against the Cantrell family. They created their own political party, selected their candidates, and started campaigning. Naturally, those in power don't like to give it up. You know the old saying, all power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Those in power don't want to give it up without a fight. We've seen this throughout history. Well, that's what the Cantrell family did. They did so with the assistance of, let's see, what's this guy's name? The sheriff's name? Oh, yeah. Pat Mansfield, who was a protege of the previous sheriff, a fellow named Paul Cantrell. So obviously the sheriff, Pat Mansfield, is going to do whatever the Cantrell family says. You know, that he's their buddy. The sheriff's department did everything they could to disrupt the campaigning of these GIs. They were legally campaigning. That's called censorship, folks. You know, that's intimidation. That's illegal. You can't do that. Now, also consider that this was happening to veterans who had just gotten through defending our country. And here they come home and have this happen to them. Well, the GIs have finally had enough. They decided we got to defend ourselves. The Cantrell family figured, no, we can't let this go on. You know, we can't let these GIs actually, you know, have a chance of beating us. Here's what we'll do. We'll round them up. So this sheriff, Pat Mansfield, decided we're going to round these guys up. So they tried it. But what they didn't expect is that the GIs had gotten wind of it. And so knowing that this might be coming, the GIs decided, you know what, we need to arm ourselves. Fortunately, they had a friend in the armory, and they got into the armory. Here's what they had after getting into the armory. 3 M1 Garand rifles, 5 M1911 pistols, all of which, by the way, the GIs are quite familiar with. They just got back. 24 M1917 Enfield rifles. Gee, they know about that too. And let's see, some other guns, which aren't listed, and some dynamite. So when the sheriff's department came to round them up and started shooting at them, the sheriff's department was unprepared for the response. The GIs fired back. Well, the GIs drove these sheriffs into a jail. These sheriff's deputies, rather, into the jail cell, jail building there. And that's what they used for cover. So there was this fight going on. There was a stalemate going on. The governor, of course, had gotten informed of all this and decided, maybe I should send the National Guard in to disperse these GIs. But then the governor decided not to, because the governor probably correctly realized, wait a minute, what's the National Guard made up of? What do they consist of? Oh, wait. Fellow GIs? Uh-oh. We risk swelling the ranks of these rebels if I send GIs after GIs. So the governor decided, no, we're not going to do that. Basically, the Cantrells had to fend for themselves. The aftermath was basically this. The GIs won. They essentially drove the Cantrell power structure out. They defeated the 100-plus sheriff's deputies that were sent against them, sent them running. The sheriff's department was disbanded, and the GIs took over the police duties because, of course, there were no police after they all got run out of town. Remarkably, things improved. There were far fewer invalid arrests. You had candidates that actually gave a darn about following the law. Wow, imagine that. And the Cantrells were banished for good. They never tried coming back as far as, you know, getting power and such. And that's a good thing. Now, look what the GIs used. M1 Garands, 1911 pistols, M1917 Enfield rifles, some other guns, and some dynamite. Let's look at just the rifles. What was the state of the art during and after World War II for military firearms? Say your main battle rifle. It was the M1 Garand, of course. The rifle that won World War II. Chambered in .30-06 and semi-automatic in its function, it scared the daylights out of the Germans. The Germans are said to have absolutely hated the M1 Garand because it was so doggone effective against them. Civilians had what the army had. And I remind you, this was a last resort because the sheriffs were coming at these GIs with force. The GIs responded with force only because they knew that force was being used against them and actually had been used against them previously with the arrests and such and the beatings up by the police. So it seems to me that contrary to what some folks are saying, oh, well, you know, military assault rifles in civilian hands, Well, that's exactly what these folks had. That's exactly what these now civilians, former GIs, had. They had actual military rifles, the state of the art at that time. Fast forward to today, the year is 2012. The state of the art right now is the Colt M16. That's the main battle rifle issued to our troops. God forbid there should ever be another Battle of Athens, Tennessee. But if there is, I think we've shown that what the Army has, what's available to the Army, as far as, you know, battle rifles and such, why shouldn't that be available to citizens to keep a corrupt government in check? In this case, a county government that was terrorizing the civilians, corrupting things like crazy. Remember, the Second Amendment is about keeping tyranny in check. Has nothing to do with hunting or sport or anything like that. Is to keep our government officials from going corrupt, is to prevent a government gone wrong. Now, here's another. Hurricane Katrina. Now, we all know what that was about. You know, that terrible, terrible hurricane that just came through and wiped New Orleans out. Oh gosh, by some estimates, 80% of New Orleans was underwater at some point, and it was anarchy everywhere. Some of us may have seen reports of grandma getting tackled. The cops going from house to house to house. What they did was they confiscated people's firearms during a state of anarchy. When looting was going on, looting was rampant. Oh gosh, in some cases it might as well have been similar to the Los Angeles riots of 1991. People were basically fighting for survival. And you're going to take away their one tool that can keep looters at bay. Well, that's exactly what the cops did, in gross violation of the law, gross violation of the Second Amendment to our Constitution. We have video footage of this. Now, whether or not you like the NRA, they did make this video fairly popular. It's on YouTube. You can watch it. There are basically four or five heavily armed cops. I mean, these guys look like the SWAT team. They've got M16s. They're, you know, busting into grandma's house, tackling grandma. Yeah, they tackle grandma. You don't have to believe me. You can watch it yourself. It's there. Basically ransacked her house, did whatever they wanted. They went from house to house to house and did this. Well, eventually they got to this one neighborhood who, as it turns out, had heard about what was going on. They were alerted to it. This particular neighborhood, turns out, was 75% armed. That means 75% of all the households in there had firearms. They said, No, the jackboots aren't going to do that to us. These police are not going to do that to us. So, of course, the jackboot thugs arrive with their M16s ready to roll. They're locked and cocked, right? Then they see what's arrayed against them. They have their M16s, but now they find themselves staring down the barrel, or barrels, of multiple 308 Winchesters, 30-06s, and I understand at least one 50 BMG rifle. And these cops were told in no uncertain terms, no, you will not confiscate our tools of defense from us. We did nothing wrong. Now leave in peace. These jackboot cops took a look at their firepower, which was pretty impressive, and then compared it to the firepower arrayed against them. And they decided, maybe we'll leave this neighborhood alone. And they, I guess, presumably went off to other easier pickings neighborhoods. Folks, there. Right there. I can't imagine a clearer example, other than perhaps the aforementioned Battle of Athens, for why an armed citizenry is a good thing. Those residents didn't shoot at those cops. They simply told the cops, don't tread on us. We did nothing wrong. And the jackboots were held in check. So for those of you who believe military-style arms are not good in the hands of civilians, I'm sorry, I have to disagree with you. If not for the unarmed citizenry, what would have happened in Athens? What would have happened to that neighborhood in Katrina? Well, actually, we know what happened in Katrina. You can see the video, what happened to Grandma. We'll take another short break for station identification and be right back. Stay tuned.
Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom.
Ah, Mark, how are you, friend?
Hey, Doc Weston, how are you doing?
You're listening to the Barstool Discussion.
Welcome to Gunsmithing Radio with your host, Fred Zeglin.
You're listening to the Gun Review Podcast, a podcast that is made up entirely of gun reviews from the ordinary gun owner.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast.
This is Downrange Radio, and I'm your host, Michael Bain.
You are listening to the Personal Armament Podcast, Give Me Some Lumen Show. This is Rob Robidoux.
From the commander's chair of the Rolling Chicken Hammer Love Wagon Studio, it's the Road Gunner Podcast, coming at you with 80,000 pounds of concealed carry.
You're listening to Firearms Cafe. I'm your host, Tony Brown.
You're listening to the Gun Rights Advocates Podcast, and I am your host, Mark Vanderberg.
Welcome to the Practical Defense Quick Tip of the Week. I'm your host, Alex Addicks.
Live from sunny Live Oak, Florida, it's the Prolonged Podcast.
Now, your host for the Politics and Guns Podcast, Paul Lathrop.
Hello and welcome to episode 306. Wow, 206
of your weekly Gun Dudes Podcast.
Hello, gunslingers.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jim Fleming, and this is Reloading Radio.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Rimfire Podcast. My name is Ken Kowalski, and I'll be your host.
Shooting the Breeze, the formal gun podcast of WaltNPA.com. I am Walt White.
This is Doc Wesson, and in this episode of the Gun Nation.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Armed Citizen Podcast. I'm your host, Mick McCart.
Welcome to the Survival Gun Show. My name is Chip Monk, and I'm your humble correspondent.
Every show on the Gun Rights Radio Network gets support from the network in one form or another, and the network needs your support to keep bringing you these podcasts. Please consider going to www.gunrightsradio.com/donate and becoming a subscriber to the network. A subscription is only $2 a month and does things like helping pay for servers and bandwidth. From time to time, the network receives donated products it uses to give away to subscribers, and this year it has an amazing prize to be awarded to one lucky subscriber. The Masada Ube Group has donated an $800 Mag 40 class to be given away, and all you have to do to be eligible to win the drawing is to be a subscriber to the network. More details to be released soon on the drawing and other prizes. So don't wait. Head over to www.gunrightsradio.com/donate and become a subscriber now to be sure you're eligible to win this fantastic training opportunity.
Time, I have in my hands something rather remarkable. At least it's pretty remarkable to me. I'm kind of proud of it. It's a Finnish M39 rifle. We're going to talk about this rifle in the context of what we've been discussing so far. For those of you just joining in, we basically just got through talking about why the notion of military-style firearms in general civilian hands is actually a bulwark for freedom, you know, against tyranny. Battle of Athens, we talked about that. Battle of Athens, Tennessee, that is, the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. You know, these are like the canonical examples of why the right to keep and bear arms must not be infringed. And that's where this M39 rifle comes in. This is a Finnish Mosin-Nagant rifle. It's heavy. It's long. It's just huge. It shoots this cartridge called the 7.62x54R, like all other Mosin-Nagants. And it reminds me of a conversation that I had with some Finnish journalists last year. They come on over to the United States asking, why do we care so much about the Second Amendment? So our local Second Amendment organization, the VCDL, put out a call saying, hey, anyone would like to talk to these journalists? Come on up. So, of course, I did. I set up a meeting with them, and I took them to my local shooting range. We had a great time. There were two women and one man. The two women were the reporters, you might say, and the man was basically the cameraman. The gentleman had actually served in the Finnish Army, and so was pretty familiar with firearms already. He turned out to be a pretty good shot. The two women hadn't fired since they were little kids, but they weren't strangers to what a gun is. Well, of course not. They're Finnish. They have a tradition of firearms ownership and of defending freedom. Well, when I took them to the range, they had a great time. I let them shoot my 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world. They, of course, were familiar with Dirty Harry, and I had them shoot some 44 Special out of it. Then we went and had some lunch and talked some more. And that's when we got into a fairly heavy discussion of why the Second Amendment matters to us so much. Being Finnish, of course, they are familiar with something called the Winter War that they had over there. It happened roughly the same time that World War II happened. It was in that same era, 1939 to 1940. They are also, of course, familiar with their own independence from Russia, then later the Soviet Union. This happened, I believe, in 1917. That was called, basically, their Civil War. This was when Finland broke apart from Russia and declared itself an independent nation. They fought. They captured a lot of formerly Russian Mosin-Nagants and used them in their defense. Once Russia, well, then later the Soviet Union, recognized the new nation of Finland's right to exist, they said, okay, you don't need your guns anymore. You can put them away now. You can get rid of them. The Finns said, well, okay, I suppose I better pretend to do so. And that's all they did was pretend to do so. But we've got to keep up appearances because, let's face it, Russia, now the Soviet Union, is still a fairly large country with a fairly large population, and we're a tiny population by contrast. So that's what they did. They took apart their rifles. These journalists told me this. And they hid them under the floorboards. And it's a darn good thing that they did, too. Because in 1939, this insignificant little fella named Joseph Stalin, who had come to power in the Soviet Union, decided, hey, let's invade Finland and take them back. How dare they broke away from us? How dare they? So here comes the Soviet army. The Finns, of course, were grossly outnumbered. They had, some rifles, of course. They had something called the M28, the Model 28. This was basically an accurized Mosin-Nagant rifle, an accurized Russian Mosin-Nagant that they totally reworked and made even more accurate than it already is. Their most famous sniper, a 5'3" Finnish dude, a little pixie of a dude if you can call a guy a pixie, named Simo Haja, exemplifies the strength of the Finnish resistance. Let me tell you about this guy. Like I said, tiny little fella in a nation full of giants. I mean, these are, the Nordic Viking types, okay? And when you're 5'3", you ain't that big, even in the United States, let alone over there. Well, this guy by himself scored 505 kills against Soviet troops, including their snipers, over 3 months. He's not just the greatest sniper in Finland's history. He's the greatest sniper on planet Earth. He's the greatest that ever walked on this land. He was so good that the Soviet Union called him their White Death, and they devised several, pretty lame actually, strategies to try to get rid of this guy. They would shell areas where they thought he was hiding out, and he just kept scoring headshots against enemy Soviet invaders. Before there was FPS Doug, there was Simo Haja. Boom, headshot indeed. Finally, somebody got him. Blew half his face off. Got him right in the chin. Now, I don't know about you all, but if I'm hit in the face with a high-powered rifle bullet, I'm probably going to drop just from the shock, the pain, the loss of blood. Oh no, not this man. Not Simo Haja. Not only did he stay conscious, he found the Soviet soldier who had shot him and killed that Soviet soldier before he collapsed. Fortunately, he was found and his life was saved. He was express promoted from corporal to second lieutenant. And after a bunch of medical attention, his face got put back together. He left us 10 years ago at the age of, 93 or 94, something like that. Talk about a warrior. Well, he wasn't the only one. There was an army of Simo Hayas, a small army, well, compared to the Soviet army. And these folks, these incredibly tough, resilient folks, beat back the Red Army, Stalin's Red Army. I discussed this with these Finnish journalists last year, and they were slightly amazed that I knew about it, but I told them, yes, of course we know about that over here. We know about your winter war. We know what you did. And I explained to them, this is why we care about the Second Amendment. For the same reasons that you kept your rifles, took them apart, and hid them under those floorboards like you just told me that you had. And they said, oh yeah, you got a point. We get it. We had a great talk about that. Folks, it's about liberty. It's not about hunting or sport. Though those are certainly fun things. The Second Amendment is actually about defending your nation and its principles from all enemies, foreign and domestic. That's what this Finnish M39 means to me. This rifle that I'm holding right now. It symbolizes freedom. Freedom of an incredibly resilient, tough people against an invading army. They stood up for their principles. And we, likewise, must continue to stand up for ours. Because that's who we are. Some for you all to think about. Oh, by the way, this M39 bolt-action rifle that I'm holding, by the way, is a military-style rifle. Matter of fact, this is not just a military-style rifle. It's an actual military rifle. I'm sure this thing actually saw combat. It's got dings on it, that's for sure. So to tell me that, quote-unquote, military rifles in the hands of civilians is a bad idea, I can't buy it. Those who own M1 Garands, M1903 Springfields, you know, the Lee Enfields, they're all military rifles. They're symbols of our freedom. They're symbols of freedom all over the world. Think about it. This is Cowboy T, signing off until next time. Until then, safe shooting. Thanks for listening.